Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Welcome to the conference call on the first quarter results that we published earlier this morning. Sitting here with me is Mr. Rolf Dieter Schwab, CFO and member of the DSM Management Board. He will elucidate on the results and after that answer your questions. As a reminder, I am obliged to read the following statement to you that today's presentation can contain forward-looking statements. In that regard, I would like to point you to our disclaimer regarding forward-looking statements as published on our website and in our press releases. With that, I would like to hand over the call to Mr. Rolf Dieter Schwab. Rolf Dieter, please go ahead.
Thank you, Herman. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning and welcome to our conference call on the first quarter results 2011. As you can see in our press release, we had a very strong quarter, continuing our positive momentum. Our organic sales growth was 14% in the quarter, of which 6% was volume growth and 8% was pricing. Our EBITDA from continuing operations increased 14% to €325 million, excluding a €8 million IFRS pension adjustment in 2010, the increase would have been 18%. Life sciences results were driven by ongoing good performance at nutrition, and our material sciences cluster posted solid results with volume gains and pricing strength. As a result of this, and also due to a lower tax rate, our earnings per share increased by 30%. The results now include Martek as of the 25th of February, so a little more than 1 month. The integration is on track, and the EBITDA contribution of Martek is fully in line with our expectations. The macroeconomic trend remained positive in the first quarter. High growth economies, especially China, continued to be very strong, while growth in Western Europe and North America was moderate. In this environment, DSM posted solid sales growth as a result of ongoing volume growth and pricing strength. The monetary and financial instability reflected in volatile currency exchange rates and inflationary pressures impacted our costs. Especially the strength of the Swiss franc negatively affected nutrition. The increasing input prices were on average compensated for by pricing strength. The events in Japan had very little impact on DSM's businesses. Now for the outlook. Overall, the consensus economic outlook for 2011 is positive. DSM expects the trading conditions experienced during the first quarter to continue in the remainder of the year, with strong growth in China and the other high-growth economies, together with moderate growth in mature economies. DSM is conscious of the macroeconomic uncertainties. The unrest in the Middle East has had no impact on DSM's business except for the higher oil price causing the prices for energy and certain raw materials to increase. DSM continues to pass on these higher costs through further price increases. At this time, DSM believes that the tragic events in Japan are likely to have only a limited impact on full-year earnings. The nutrition cluster is expected to achieve sustained good sales performance with healthy volume growth and price increases. Currency exchange rates are expected to remain volatile. The weaker US dollar and especially the strong Swiss franc are unfavorable for the nutrition cluster. The EBITDA of nutrition with the inclusion of Martek is expected to be clearly above last year. The focus within the pharma cluster will be on strategy execution such as the announced anti-infectives joint venture with Sinochem. Overall business conditions remain challenging, and results are expected to be lower than in 2010. The performance materials cluster is benefiting significantly from continued global growth in the relevant end markets, such as automotive, electronics, and packaging. Results are expected to be clearly above last year. Polymer Intermediates is expected to continue its excellent performance in 2011 based on DSM's unique global presence and very favorable trading conditions, although the current very tight demand-supply balance might ease somewhat. In quarter 2 2011, a maintenance shutdown is planned for acrylonitrile. Despite the headwinds from higher input costs and on balance unfavorable currencies, 2011 is expected to be a strong year for DSM. This gives DSM confidence that it will meet the EBITDA target of €1.4 to €1.6 billion in 2013, with return on capital employed to exceed 15%. And now I would like to open the lines for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will start the question and answer session now. To be registered for the question and answer queue, please press 1 and 4 at any time. And if you are on speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the keys. So 1 and 4, 14, go ahead, please. Today's first question is from Annemarie van der Meulen, Dow Jones. Go ahead, please, ma'am.
Hi, good morning. I had a question on the inflation. Last week, AkzoNobel said that they saw inflation increasing to 15% in the first quarter. I was wondering whether you could say something on that and whether you think it has stabilized now or whether it will increase further or...
Well, I don't know exactly how they define inflation. I mean, basically what I said also in the introduction is we, of course, see driven by the higher oil price, some of the raw materials going up significantly.
Yeah. How much?
Well, that's difficult to say on average. We have had so many of raw materials because of the different businesses from pharma and nutrition to material sciences that I do not have an average number here for the company. But the raw material obviously increases. Oil prices at between $120 and $130 per barrel, basically, most likely at least, I would say, driven by the issues in North Africa and the Middle East. But that's what we have to deal with, and we do so, and we increase our prices also, so that our margin is actually not only not affected, I think our margin is recovery.
Yeah. And net sales were boosted by 8% price increases in this quarter. Do you see that going up further then?
Well, we have announced further price increases in certain businesses. So, yes, we have to be alert, otherwise we lose position. And as we see also in our EBITDA margin in performance materials, which is roughly 13%, and you know our target is 17%, so we are not there. We are still below, and we are slightly above quarter one 2010, but not significantly, so there is still a way to go.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
The next question is from Aaron Gray, Blog Reuters. Go ahead, please, sir.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking our question. I just want to look at... polymer intermediate, you mentioned a 34% price rise there. Is that the figure for caprolactam or is there a different figure for caprolactam prices?
Well, basically we have, as you know, two key materials which we make there. First of all, caprolactam with a large capacity and also globally because we have three production locations in USA, China and here in Holland. And we have also, only here in the Netherlands, we have a production of acrylonitrile, the second material. In both cases, prices, markets are very tight, and so prices have been increasing quite significantly, and that has driven the overall pricing development in this polymer intermediates cluster. If you look at the development versus the first quarter 2010, then we had 34% price increase, as you say also, and almost 10% volume. That is a very nice combination, and it really was driven by both businesses.
Okay, but you don't give specific figures on caprolactam price, right?
No, we don't split it out.
No, okay. No. Then just a follow-up question. You mentioned the tight supply-demand balance will ease somewhat going forward. Does that mean you expect prices will fall or they just rise? Will you be able to just increase them more slowly than previously?
Well, I don't know whether prices will continue to increase. What we say is we didn't say will because nobody knows. We said in our outlook statement might ease somewhat because we see an almost unprecedented tight situation at the moment. But it is a might. Nobody knows, as I say. We will have to see as we go forward. If the supply-demand balance eases somewhat, then what you would expect is that potentially prices not only go not up anymore, but maybe going down somewhat. But it is a might. So, to be honest, nobody knows.
Okay, but that's a possibility. You'd have to lower prices going forward.
Well, these prices are relatively close to the development of demand and supply and also input cost. So the price reactions are very fast. So they are fast when they go up and they are also fast when they go down. But as I said, nobody knows really. We can only say that the situation today is in the global utilization rate very high, and it's always a question how long that will remain, but we are not negative on the business. We only are cautious, I would say.
No problem, thank you. Just one other question. A strong 2011, just to, I think we asked this question last time as well, but what exactly does that mean? There's still no real number in there at all, even though you're looking at a number in 2013. Where do you think we'll be at the end of this year?
Well, as you know, we have stopped giving those specific numbers a few years ago. But as if you read carefully through the outlook statement in total, then what you see is that we say nutrition sustains good performance. So that gives you an indication there. Pharma, challenging, so results lower than last year. And performance materials and polymer intermediates, both, we talk about significant improvements versus 2010. Now, of course, we leave it up to you and up to also the investors and analysts to create their own numbers based on their own macroeconomic assumptions. But overall, the strong gives a clear indication of direction, I would say, without giving a specific number.
Okay, thanks very much, Joel.
The next question is from Anna Freshman, AMP. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hello, good morning. My question is somewhat similar, also about the raw material prices. If they keep going up, do you expect to be able to keep the pricing strength and to be able to keep rising your prices to compensate for this year?
Yes, absolutely. We are optimistic that we have strength in the market. We have very good products, differentiated products where we can also pass on our raw materials because the products are just worth it.
Okay, fully. I'm sorry, hello?
Fully. I mean, as I said, we have always a time lag because we cannot predict exactly what the raw material prices will do, driven mostly by the oil price and the overall economy. So you always have to react because it's very difficult to proactively increase prices more than needed. So, but we are quite active on that, and as we saw also is the margin in performance materials, especially in polymer intermediates, far above our own targets, even at EBITDA margin of almost 22% in the first quarter. Our target is 14%. And in performance materials with 13 roughly at the moment, we are still behind the 17 target. So we still need to catch up and try to do more than the short-term raw material prices actually require.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And one other question. You mentioned a moderate growth in Western Europe and U.S. Do you see a positive momentum for the rest of the year?
Well, we also assume for the rest of the year moderate growth. I mean, we have basically what the big economists in the world say about the growth assumptions, and you know they are also not all saying exactly the same. But generally speaking, I guess the assumption in Europe and North America, Western Europe and North America, is more in the order of magnitude of 2-3% growth. Or even below 2%, while in countries like China on the economy, the growth assumption, although there are some discussions about the sustainability, is still around almost 10% in the first quarter again. Also, India is very strongly growing, and Latin America are most economies. So we see two different speeds in the world.
Yes, of course. Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Sheena Matthews, Bloomberg News. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning. I was hoping you could talk a bit more about your pharma business. Several questions to do with that. First of all, why the sales were so disappointing. You also say about your profitability that you need to execute strategy, and I was wondering if you could go into a bit more detail on what that means exactly. And then any comments you can give us about talks with joint venture partners, how the joint venture with Sinochem is going would be appreciated. Thanks.
Okay, pharma strategy, we say clearly that we have challenges there. That is challenges driven by also the issues in the pharma industry in general. And those challenges are especially in the custom manufacturing operation, where the business is really depending on the large pharma customers to ask custom manufacturing partners like DSM to produce for them. There we need more contracts. Our capacities are not fully utilized, so we are hunting for contracts. We are at the same time restructuring as much as possible. So this is out of own strength to support the business in the antibiotics business. Also, we do a couple of actions out of own strength, one of them being the new factory with the most modern technology, which we are currently building in China. But in addition, we have said in September last year when we announced our strategy, we would need partnering in both business parts, so both in anti-infectives and in the custom manufacturing operations. In the latter one, we are still in the project phase. We have not developed this far enough to make any announcements, so we will see how that goes further. And we will, of course, inform you as soon as we have found a partner and can definitely say that something is in the final making. In the anti-infectious business, you mentioned already Sinochem. We have announced that we found that partner. Now we are still in the process of finalizing this partnership, and we still are working on that. So I cannot give you a specific day-to-day update, but we still are positive on completing this partnership as soon as possible.
Thanks.
The next question comes from Andrew Noel, Bloomberg. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Rolf, Herman. Just a follow-up on the pharma answers. I mean, is there no scope for expanding the Sinochem joint venture to the other areas that you're trying to partner up with?
Well, I think first we should get it done for the areas which we have agreed between the two partners, and then we should work together and see how it's developing, and then we should look at questions like this. But I guess first we have an area where we have an agreement that it makes sense to work together, and first we should get that done.
Right. And what about the sort of longer-term stance that you're taking on the pharma business? Because obviously, you know, you've got a lot of other exciting stuff going on. So you know, how do you feel long-term? Just remind me what your view is on that business.
Yeah, the view is positive. Otherwise, we would probably have decided something different in the last strategy update in 2010. So basically, this is driven by a few macro trends in the world, and the most important for the pharma business, obviously, is aging population in the whole world, in all countries. We all get older, and there are lots and lots of statistics, and we all know that also without statistics, I guess, that the older you get, there's potentially more need for pharmaceuticals. So basically, the market for pharmaceuticals should be a very good market. That's the market side of it. On the other side, also, from what are our capabilities, we have very strong technology to offer to this trend. So in that combination, the conclusion for us was that this should be principally a very interesting market to continue to be in. Only we have to make it profitable, because it doesn't make sense to be in that market without making it sufficiently profitable.
Well, when you said you're hunting for contracts from the big pharma companies, is the trend that they're still keeping stuff in house, or are you getting beaten or sort of by lower cost producers?
Well, I'm not sure there is a clear trend. For many years, the industry has discussed that there basically is a trend, and should be also a trend, that the big pharma houses outsource manufacturing, because this is a capability they do not really need to have in-house. On the other side, of course, they have capacities, and they have to deal with the capacities they have installed today. So there is a trend, and there is the trend sometimes not so visible. But basically, the future is we need manufacturing of pharmaceuticals. That will be completely, I guess, easy to understand, unavoidable. And in the long run, companies like DSM should be better positioned to offer that manufacturing service to the pharmaceutical companies.
Right. Okay. Can I just jump to another subject now? I'm sure you've seen the recent sort of reporting on Elliott Associates and how they increased their stake in Danisco. And I guess it's decision time for you guys now. What do you think you might What do you think you're going to do with your stake? Are you going to play? Are you going to go along with the offer?
Yeah, I think we know, of course, what the stage is. To a certain extent, we also follow discussions. We know, of course, that the tender period finishes end of this week. But I think it's also understandable that in this phase of the situation between DuPont and Danisco, we will not comment on our own position. Although I can, of course, add that with issuing our press release early January already, when the tender offer of that DuPont and Danisco was made public a few days later, we published our position, and we also made clear basically what the direction for DSM would be by saying that this offer will give us a cash inflow of more than 200 million and a book profit of 129 million. So I think that directionally it's pretty clear, although I will not comment specifically in this critical phase of the whole process.
Okay. And just to take a couple of minutes on acquisitions, I mean, we've seen DSM buy that polyethylene, sort of polymers business in China. Given the growth in China and Asia, I mean, within nutrition and the biotech side of your business, is there less need to make acquisitions in that area of the world? Because you often talk about clusters, and obviously the clusters in, you know, some of the biosciences in Europe and in the States. So are they really the hunting grounds for your ambitions in those areas?
Well, when we look at acquisitions, we do not look specifically at regions. We approach it from a business point of view. So we have 8 business groups which run the business, which we combine into the 4 clusters and segments which we report. Those 8 business groups, they look at the acquisition potential, which nicely fits their business development and their strategy. And then where it happens to be, I wouldn't say is completely accidental. Of course, we have an interest in high growth economies, but you see from the examples which we recently published that this can be almost anywhere. I mean, Martek is a US-based company with also a very strong focus on the US in terms of sales. We also announced a fiber company acquisition in China, so that is Material Sciences, a Chinese company. Then we announced, and it's currently running, a tender offer on a company for resins, new technology, UV-based resins in Taiwan. But it's driven basically by the interest and the strategy of the business groups.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
Not by a regional selection.
But that's what I kind of mean, you know, like the Taiwan is resins and the other one was sort of the polyethylene side. But, you know, the Martek was nutrition. And is it fair to say that, you know, those kind of assets that are sort of feeding, involved in food ingredients and nutrition, are they better off placed, you know, are they more likely to be in sort of westernized nations?
No, for instance,
Martek, can you export all you need to Asia, or do you need to build a sort of a Martek related plant over there?
Well, whether we need to build a plant or not, that certainly is a question for the future. But as you know from the Martek acquisition, since that is a very strong business already in the United States, with our global footprint and our infrastructure, we can most likely develop that business outside the United States much faster than Martek could have done it. So this is obviously the interest there, but also in feed, as you mentioned it specifically. I can remind you on some of the activities we did in the last couple of years. We built in the meantime 4 premix factories in China. The 5th one is under construction. We bought one in Korea. We opened one in India recently. We have developed a joint venture in a region of Russia for premix recently last year. So this is also going on in the high growth economies and not only in the Western world.
Okay, and just finally, you have said in the past, I recall, that you may, you know, temporarily give up your A3 or A rating from Moody's and S&P given you're so bullish today, you know, a strong year for 2011, you know, what's your feeling? Are you stronger or weaker on that kind of statement now about sort of just temporarily giving that up for an asset that you can't resist?
Yeah, that was really the exceptional case. I think we are with the cash position we have even after the Martech acquisition, and some expectations for a significant cash in also in the next months. We are far away from a potential situation where we would need to use that statement. So it is, of course, a statement which you will always make to keep your options open. But if you look at the balance sheet today, we are honestly far, far away from that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for answering all those.
Okay.
Judging on the time, one more question.
The last question is from Aaron Gray, Block Reuters. Go ahead, please.
Good morning again. Some of my questions answered by my Bloomberg colleague, particularly on Danesco. Just one question. If you failed to find the right acquisitions or you've got some of that cash hanging around, would you still consider a buyback perhaps next year if acquisitions don't develop as expected?
Yeah, we have always said that if after a certain period we didn't fix the period, we will not have sufficient acquisitions and not have developed the balance sheet to a reasonable leverage, then of course we might consider again share buyback or special dividend, by the way. But we have not fixed the deadline there. At the moment, our focus is on getting the right acquisitions like Martech, also a few more, because we can afford a few more. And we are also interested in making a few more. So it is an option. It always has been an option. And as you know from the past, also DSM did buy back shares for that same reason. So we keep that option open. But today there is no need to speculate on that at all.
Well, that's great. Thanks very much.
All right, then I thank you very much for participating. The presentation of the results can be found on the internet site, and if you have any additional questions, you know where to find me. Thanks.